Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You're listening to Just Ask the Question, Adventures in Reporting with your host, Brian Karam.
Hi, welcome back to Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, with our weekly roundup of the news, Just Ask the Press. And as always with us, former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large from CQ Roll Call, John T. Bennett. This week in our things to unpack, the latest in the Middle East and the measured response of President Biden. D.C.'s Trump trial is postponed. What's the effect of that on the outcome of all the other cases against Donald Trump? Chuck Schumer wants an immigration vote next week. There is a deflection defense, of course, underway in the Republican Party by calling Biden a potty mouth, and the Swiftie controversy, two issues that aren't issues in politics, and we'll take a look at that. And then finally, our Super Bowl predictions for the coming week. Yes, you're going to want to stick around for that. Anyway, I'm Brian Karam. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we'll unpack all of it.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
At KPMG, we make the difference. It's not just something we say. It's what we do. Our professionals believe in the value of collaboration and the power of technology. We work closely with clients to uncover insights that illuminate opportunity, develop bold solutions that innovate industries, and create better outcomes driven by data. Brighter insights. Bolder solutions. Better outcomes. It's how our people make the difference, driving growth and value for our clients. KPMG. Make the difference.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hey, Just Ask the Question podcast listeners. If you've got a second, head on over to Twitter and follow our official page, JATQ Podcast. That's JATQ Podcast.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not found anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, with our weekly wrap-up of the news, Just Ask the Press, with former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large from CQ Roll Call, John T. Bennett. Michael and John, good to see you guys again.
Good to see you too, Brian.
It's all your fault again, Michael. That's I've been told. That's anyway. You got to get more sleep at night. So we're going to start out with the big thing this week. The Houthis fire at us. We fire at the Houthis. We go after the Iran proxies. The question I'd like to ask, John, if I were sitting in the White House briefing room is, they shoot at us, we shoot back at them. What do you call that? And at what point in time do you seek congressional approval for your actions? I don't think we've been completely honest with the American people in that briefing room about what's going on with the U.S. and the Middle East. John.
Yeah, I think right now you call that an armed conflict. you don't use the W word, war. And President Biden is following a time-honored tradition of not seeking congressional approval for the strikes against the Houthis. The argument from John Kirby and other national security officials is they don't need it. And you've got congressional hawks like Lindsey Graham. This morning we're taping here on Sunday, February 4th. Lindsey Graham was on one of the Sunday shows, and you know he's a hawk. He's been on armed services and foreign relations and the Intel Committee, I believe, and judiciary, importantly. He's the ranking member. And he said the president does not need to come to Congress, that this is covered. And what John Kirby, Jake Sullivan, and others say is this is an Article 2 situation. Article 2 of the Constitution gives the presidency the power to defend the country, and that includes strikes like this. I may or may not have written a master's thesis on presidential war powers, and I can tell you, I actually did some research. Michael looked shocked to hear that. I actually did some research and found out that the Supreme Court time and time and time and time again has sided with presidents from both parties that they do have cover under Article 2 to defend the country and have sided with the presidency when it's been challenged for these kinds of strikes. So, you know, they're not going to do an AUMF, an authorization of the use of military force, specifically for the Houthis or these other Iranian militias. And if you want to bring in the other strikes, the retaliatory strikes against these militias in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere, Biden doesn't need that now because the militias killed U.S. military troops. So the troops were attacked, and that is covered by the Constitution. He is the commander-in-chief of the military, right, and he has the right to defend the military.
What would escalate it to the point where he'd have to go to Congress?
If he wanted to, I believe he would need to go to Congress if he wanted to strike inside Iraq. And that's not a completely legal assessment. I think more political that he wouldn't want that completely, even though it would be mostly as former DC sports radio host Steve Zabin would say, he doesn't want it completely just on his bill. Yeah. When the waiter comes, he wants Congress to split it with him. Now, it wouldn't be, they're not chopping this thing down the middle,
sure he'd want to have, like all the other presidents before him, a coalition of participating nations.
Yeah, so this would be a long drawn out thing, but he would want Congress to have some ownership if he had to strike inside Iran. And yes, you want the coalition of the willing, and that would take almost as long probably than getting anything through the House. And once again, I think the House would be the long pole in the tent. Senators would probably go along with this. You'd probably get, you know, 70 to 75 votes in the Senate, but the House, who knows? Such a wild card these days.
Michael, do you think he should go to the Congress and ask for permission?
Well, I don't think he has to, as John's thesis, which I read last night, was really laying out.
It was a page turner.
Yeah. You know, the power of the president to engage in these types of actions seem to be, you know, clearly articulated in law. And if you had to go to Congress before you could act this way, nothing would ever get done because Congress doesn't act.
Right.
And so this has to be.
And yet there are plenty of people screaming that he should.
Right. Well, fair enough. But
just because, you know, like him, but that.
Well, but I mean, I think that in our lifetimes, there hasn't been, I mean, Vietnam War should have been a declared war. I would think a country to country war, you know, national government against national government sort of war. Korea was a war, obviously. The world
not
wars,
a police
world,
action.
World wars, right. But these are, you know, these retaliatory strikes, I think, has to fall within the powers of the president to act quickly. And, you know, did we not seek war powers when we invaded Iraq under H.W. Bush?
Mm-hmm.
That was a war, right? So I think you can see the line between what is, you know, sort of technically a war that requires congressional approval and those which are sort of police or military responses. And I think we fall on the Biden's within his authority to do it. Clinton was in his authority to bomb when he bombed. Trump bombed. Everyone bombs. I can't think of a president that didn't
bomb something.
Somebody. I don't. Maybe did Carter not bomb somebody?
Wait a minute, John. Before you jump in, here's the question I want to add to it. So this week, the measured response that Biden gave. You think he was also sending a message to Israel, going, "You don't have to blow them off the face of the planet. You don't have to engage in you know, utter destruction. We can have a measured response." Do you think that message landed anywhere, John?
I certainly didn't land in Tel Aviv. I mean, I yesterday saw a video report. I don't know if it was the New York Times or someone else. Got reporters with video equipment, and the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, they're doing controlled detonations of what buildings are left in Gaza. So no, if Biden's trying to send some kind of, you know, inception-like message, I don't think it's landing. And we got to go back to our friend Bill Shine, who used to tell us, Brian, I think you're giving us a little too much credit.
Yeah.
I don't think in the Situation Room that Joe or Secretary Austin or whoever else is saying, well, let's show Netanyahu how to do this. That genie was out of the bottle months ago.
You had something else you wanted to add, by the way, before I
asked.
Yeah,
and you know, look at President Obama. He never got an AUMF, a congressional approval for his drone strike campaign. All across the Middle East, North Africa, you know, there weren't many places he didn't use drone strikes, and they pointed to Article 2 and the 2001 AUMF that was very broadly written after 9/11. It was broadly written because there still wasn't when Congress passed it, and they did pass it relatively quickly, very quickly for Congress. They wrote it broad to give George W. Bush and presidents after him enough authority to wage what folks thought would be a different kind of war against Al-Qaeda and associated forces. And that's really in the 2001 AUMF. It's a rubber band, as a guy I know wrote in a thesis, and you can, and presidents
that's
have,
a thesis Michael read last night.
And all three presidents since then, I guess four now, have used the 2001 AUMF because of those words, associated forces, because ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Islamic Jihad. They're all somehow kind of related. They've worked together. You know, one meeting was used to help justify the Iraq war because a Baathist government, a Saddam Hussein government official, allegedly met with an Al-Qaeda somewhat leader, and boom, Associated Forces. So it's an unintended consequence there was a reason it was so broadly written, but it's allowed four presidents now to use it for all kinds of things.
There you go. And from the battlefield to the courtroom, the D.C. Trump's trial was postponed this week while they await the decision on immunity. And I would ask the stupid question, oh, gee, what's the outcome of that, Michael?
So in the federal cases, and really in the Georgia case, Trump has asserted presidential immunity. And until that is decided, courts don't really want to go forward with a trial to only find out mid-trial or post-trial that his argument that he's immune was correct, because then they've wasted all this time prosecuting someone who the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia has said you can't try. He, yes, is correct that former presidents have absolute immunity and can't be tried. Like it or not, that's the law. So they don't want to have a trial and have that court decision interfere with the outcome. Just a waste of time. So they're all saying, well, let's see what the court says. And everyone is hoping that the D.C. Court of Appeals, which has heard the immunity case, and we all remember that argument where Trump's lawyer said, unless he is impeached and convicted, he cannot be tried in a criminal court, even if he sends the SEAL team out to kill his political opponent. That was the nature of the argument in its extreme. So the court said, well, let's just wait on that. And everyone is hoping that the D.C. Court of Appeals will issue its decision. They said they would do it expeditiously. It's been 3+ weeks and there's no decision. And, you know,
why is
we don't
that?
Know what to we don't know what to read into that, whether it means that they're really writing criticized proof decision, or whether there's a split among the three judges and they're trying to figure out how to get a unanimous decision. You know, you have two judges appointed by a Democrat, one appointed by a Republican. Maybe they have a difference among the three of them. So you don't know. And Biden, I believe. I think those are the two of Biden's, yeah. And one is HW's. So everyone is speculating about why it is delayed. It's sort of a pointless exercise, but it's delayed until they get that decision. And, you know, that decision, when it comes, will certainly be appealed by Trump if he loses. And so those trials could still be postponed further pending a decision whether to hear the case by the D.C. Court of Appeals in bonk, meaning all the judges, a rehearing at that level, or the Supreme Court. So we just don't know what this means. The trial judge could say, look, you know, the D.C. Court of Appeals decision, in my view, is pretty solid. I'm going to schedule this down for trial and I'll take my chances that the Supreme Court reverses, which could make a lot of sense. And we've had a lot of cases that go forward. Enron went forward. The Arthur Anderson case went forward to trial. There was a conviction obtained. And then the Supreme Court reversed 9-0 that the theory of the prosecution was untenable and the conviction got reversed. So it's very possible that the Judge Chutkan trial will go forward once there's an immunity decision, if it holds that Trump is not immune from prosecution. But Brian, the interesting thing about the delay in the federal cases, and we can talk about Georgia in a minute and what that, yeah, you know, brouhaha is about.
Yeah.
But if all those cases are on hold. Then you've got the Manhattan District Attorney case, the hush money case, where Donald Trump has been indicted for business fraud in respect to how he treated the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. And that now may be the case that goes first. The district attorney may have a clear lane to a trial. And that trial date, I think, is end of March or early May or something. It's soon. And so that may be the first case. And people have said about that case, well, you know, it's the weakest of the cases because it depends on Michael Cohen in large measure and the fellow whose name I can never remember, who is the National Enquirer, Pecker, what's his name?
Yeah, David Pecker.
David Pecker. But
I only remember that name for what. Yeah, I know. John's shaking his. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
Just leave it there, bro.
Just leave it.
But the thing that is interesting about that case is now there was a story in the New York Times, I believe, which said that the CFO of the Trump Organization, Alan Weisselberg, the guy who spent some 6 months in Rikers Island prison for crimes connected to taxes and the Trump Organization, testified in Letitia James' case, the New York civil fraud case, and now, according to the Times, is in negotiations with the prosecutors about his pleading guilty to perjury, lying in his testimony in that case. And I think that's one of the reasons why we don't have a decision in the case. Remember, that judge said he was going to make a decision at the end of the month in that Letitia James case. But Judge Engoron, the judge in that case, seems to be saying, wait a second, I got to figure out what's going on here. If I have a witness who's admitted to perjuring himself in the middle of the trial, I got to take account of that testimony now, because maybe I was giving it a little bit of credit in my determinations, and now all of a sudden I can't give it any credit, and I have to rethink it. So,
and the credit
it's he a would long, have given it's a very him. Long answer, but
the credit he would have given him would be helpful to Donald, right?
Yeah. So all of this rambling says a couple of things. One is Bragg may go first. Bragg may have now the possibility of Weisselberg as a witness affirmatively, or if Weisselberg want to testify in Trump's favor in that Stormy Daniels case, his credibility as a witness is undermined because he's now convicted of tax and convicted of perjury. You know, so he's no stronger a witness now than Michael Cohen. So you got two doozies of witness. And it also could mean that
only the best people.
It empowers Engoron to make further findings against Trump in respect to the damages that he'll have to pay in that case. So that's all, you know. The immunity decision has ripple effects. It's a it's a rock in a pond, and you're seeing all these ripples, and the ripples now are apparent in both the Letitia James case and the Bragg case.
And realistically, where would you, I mean, if you were going to guess, when do you think we'd get a decision on the immunity?
Yesterday? I have no idea, Brian. I mean, you just don't know. I just hope the reason is that they're dotting I's and crossing T's, that they're not in conflict among the three of them, because the worst thing from a time management standpoint is a split decision in the Court of Appeals, because then it's definitely going to a higher court.
If we could all hope they're just trying to write it so it won't even be picked up by the Supreme Court.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's a possibility. Now, Fannie Willis.
Yeah.
And her case.
Yes.
There are a couple of things to think about it. One is, what were you thinking? You know, how, what sort of judgment?
I know.
Did you exercise in having that relationship once the opportunity presented itself? It seems like the affair started mid sort of trial prep. Not, she didn't hire her boyfriend.
Right.
She hired a lawyer, and then he turns into her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so that, but that's a big difference.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
One is, you know, a nepotistic hire, and one is just the way things sometimes work in a work environment where people are working 20 hours a week and spending so much time, and she's single, and he was in the middle of a divorce. So that you know, that happens. It happens a lot. And it shouldn't have any bearing on the case from a standpoint of it's not going to get the case dismissed. There are two questions that I don't know the answer to. One is, if Fannie Willis said, you know what, in the interest of something, you know, sort of appearances, I'm going to step aside, whether that means her whole office has to step aside, and then you go back to square one, and you need to find somebody new to prosecute. Remember, there was one of the defendants in the Georgia case among those 14 defendants who she held a, Fannie Willis held a fundraiser for his opponent, and the court said, you cannot prosecute him. Your office is disqualified, and now they have to find somebody else to prosecute. So if the court rules or she decides that she's going to step aside, does that mean the whole office has to step aside, which means this case is at square one and it won't go to trial for a very long time? If she says, I am not going to step aside, I don't have to, and the court agrees with her, does the lawyer, the boyfriend,
special prosecutor,
step aside?
Yeah.
Right. And I think he should. I don't think he's the lead guy in what will be the trial team. I think there are people who will try the case, and he's not one of them. I think he's more a quarterback of the whole process. But were I in his situation, or were I in Fannie Willis's situation, I'd ask him to step aside, because it makes for a much cleaner look.
And that's what we're talking about here, right? It's politics.
Yes, it's not right. It's not the merits of whether it has to be done as a legal matter, but rather what does it look like?
And John, that's where we know where it's going to look, what it's going to look like, at least for Donald.
We do. I think that this does have the effect of helping him, at least timing wise, politically, and, you know, with the hush money case, looking like it will go first, I think that helps his strategy of as always desensitizing everyone to everything, because it is, as Michael said, considered the weakest of the cases. So, you know, Trump then gets to say on social media, television interviews, coming outside the courtroom, campaign rallies, you know, everywhere he talks, that this is all in his word, that he uses this word a lot now. Bullshit.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Switch on.
Yeah. And so this one going first, we talked about it here way back when, that this is kind of the nightmare scenario for Democrats. If the hush money case goes first, and it looks like they're walking right into it, and you know, Trump's going to try to delay to get these trials maybe after the election, and maybe he's at least been elected again, if not sworn in, and then, you know, there will be a lot of pressure for these cases to be dropped if he is the president-elect, and that's the strategy. I mean, it's, he doesn't come out and say it, but in so many words,
of, you know, course, that's his strategy.
Yeah, that's the strategy. Now, Georgia's the problem because that's the criminal state charges. But if he can get that pushed off long enough, or not to a conclusion, and he's the president-elect, there will be a lot of pressure on Ms. Willis to drop the case.
And on that wonderful thought, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, well, we have a lot more, including the immigration vote that Schumer wants next week. So stick around. This is Just Ask the Press. We'll be right back.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question, our weekly show, Just Ask the Press, with former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large from CQ Roll Call, John Bennett. John, when we left, we were talking about Fannie Willis, and now we're talking about Chuck Schumer. He wants to a vote on an immigration bill next week. Now, mind you, when the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, has gotten up and he said, you know, immigration is the most important issue. We have to. It's an emergency, but we're not going to solve it right away. It's all about politics, isn't it, brother?
It's all about politics, 100%. I was on the Hill this week, and Hakeem Jeffries, the House Democratic leader, took over for Nancy Pelosi in that role. He was somewhat perplexed, and understandably, at his weekly press conference, saying that, you know, for years now, Republicans have, as he said, lectured the American people about a crisis at the border. And I mean, just look at the apprehension and border crossing rates. I believe it was factcheck.org late last week put out some statistics, and it's almost 300% increases in apprehensions at the border. So even Democrats say this is a crisis. Jeffries says, you know, the White House and Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats are negotiating something, and House Republicans have lectured everyone for years, and now they won't come negotiate. And, you know, he says they're against the process that's playing out that they were for just a few months ago. So it is frustrating for everyone else involved on the Hill and the White House right now, because Speaker Johnson says they won't put what we think we might get as soon as today is whatever Senate bill, and this is a broader national security spending bill, Taiwan, Ukraine, Israel, and there's a border package. So we might get that text today, but Johnson says not going to put that on the floor. And this is very frustrating for everyone else, but this is all, there's an election.
It's all about Donald Trump. Donald Trump has told them not to push the issue because he wants to run on it. And he wants to get elected on it, and then he wants to pretend like he solved it. But the problem is that you can't tell me in one ear that it's an emergency, and in the other ear tell me, but we're going to wait a year to solve it. That just doesn't seem to fly very well with the American public. Or is it just
we'll see.
Me?
Well, it's not just you, because you're applying logic to the situation.
That's a minority of people. We're screwed.
If you look at polling, and that again, that's all we have to really go on, voters still trust Trump and Republicans on the issue of immigration, despite blocking this bill that could be out as soon as today. They still trust them, and it's not that close in most polls. So it should It should bite Republicans in the backside in November, but I just don't see evidence that it will.
Michael?
Right? You know, like, what the? But the reality is, if the House can meet the Senate at some point and pass a comprehensive immigration bill, and we can then deal with Israel and Taiwan and Ukraine and whoever else they want to prop up funding, then that should be what happens. I mean, it's been 40 or 50 years that we've been talking about
40.
An immigration solution, and they seem to be on the brink of it with to the credit of the Senate, you know, with Lankford in Oklahoma and others, you know, sort of reaching consensus. And you'd think that everyone would want to take credit. This is a Congress who you can count on a hand or a finger of things that they've accomplished. I mean, the biggest thing that they can say that they've accomplished is, well, we didn't shut down the government. Well, that's
we kept the lights on.
We swatted flies. Right. We didn't do anything, but we didn't shut it down. Not really. I would think that these guys would want to run on something. They have this tax bill that, you know, was recently, I don't know, was it passed or is it pending, that has extending child care tax credits and stuff. That's good. So they have one thing potentially. You think this Congress, if I'm a congressman and I'm going to be running for re-election and someone's going to ask me in a town hall, so what'd you accomplish? What was your batting average? What was your completion percentage? You'd want to think I could say, well, you know, for the first time in 40 years, we passed comprehensive immigration legislation. And I think that's a portent of the way we can work going forward, if only you'll reelect me. You'd think that that's what they'd want to say, as opposed to, well, we kept the lights on. We're not doing anything, but the lights, God damn it, the lights are on. And in which case, if you're the guy in the town hall, you might say, well, if you're not doing anything, why don't you just shut up the damn lights so we can save some money on electricity bills? You know,
I get blown away by a couple of things that seem so idiotic about this whole issue. The South Carolina governor, South Dakota governor, Noemes, right? She's riding in a grass boat on the Rio Grande going, I'm in a war zone. And I've been to war zones, and being in a grass boat on the Rio Grande doesn't qualify as a war zone. And what is she doing in South? All the 24 governors that have come down for their press conferences to support Texas in the immigration battle baffle me with the stupidity there. And finally, I'll say this. In 1985, I'm reading the Biden communiques to the press where they talk about the broken border. This is a broken border, and we have to work together to fix it. In 1985, I produced a 10-part series called Across the Broken Border, 40 years ago, and nothing has changed. It's no worse than it was. It's the same. And the last time the Republicans and Democrats got together for bipartisan legislation and did something on the border was in 1985 with the Simpson-Mazzoli Act, which made it illegal for large companies to hire illegal immigrants. And no one's ever been prosecuted for it. So that's how often they use that bill.
Just ahead, quickly, John. Brian, because we're all about fairness here on this here podcast. Congress did something this week. And it was very bipartisan. The House passed a tax cut bill.
Oh, yes.
It got over 300 votes on the House floor. So that's an example of election year politics. It would extend the child tax credit. It has some other reductions, including some, and this would make it might make it tough in the Senate. It has some corporate tax cuts as well. The theory there being that companies would pass on their tax savings to the consumer. That doesn't always happen, of course. So the House did something very bipartisan. just to be fair, we are understandably critical, but I just wanted to point out that they did get together and they wrote a pretty comprehensive tax bill. We'll see if it even gets a vote in the Senate.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And while we're talking about the wonderful things going on in Congress, and let's talk about deflection. I hesitate to mention some of these things because they infuriate me so much, and they do deflect from the real problems that we have in this world. But you've got this week Donald Trump called Biden, of all things, a potty mouth, because Biden in private is apparently called Trump what most of us have called him in public, using the F word. And at the same time, you've got Republicans are upset because, you know, the Swifties and the suit, and that'll lead us into our Super Bowl predictions. But they're upset because Taylor Swift is everywhere and is usurping that. Well, they claim they've got Kid Rock while the liberals have Taylor Swift. I'm just so sick of all of it. It just seems like a complete I just don't care. I don't care. I mean, is it me?
It's not just you, Brian. I would rather spend this week talking about can the Kansas City receivers continue, which they didn't do all season, catching the ball.
Right.
Can they catch the ball, which they've done in the playoffs, and can the 49ers defense slow down the Chiefs offense enough to win the game? But that is not what we're going to talk about this week. We're going to talk about somehow the NFL, Taylor Swift, and the Biden campaign getting together in some kind of four-dimensional conspiracy to help for the president get reelected in sort of a long con. That's what we're going to talk about.
Well, that's because they've been conned by Donald Trump, so they see con everywhere.
That's
but
right.
You know, the thing is honest to God, I heard someone, one of the guys who calls himself an alpha male, I don't remember which one it is, you know, one of those guys, claiming that, you know, she's not that much to look at anyway. And I'm going, she looks like every anchor on Fox. The only reason why you don't like her is because she doesn't like the same things you like. And Michael, I could tell you're just chomping at the bit to give us your read on it, but it just drives me nuts.
I am honestly completely flummoxed by this Taylor Swift controversy. I can't for the life of me figure out what is the big deal. She's a talented singer who has engaged in society beyond just her concerts. She is entitled to engage in our discourse. And I don't understand why people think that this is some right-wing conspiracy to do this or that. I mean, I just don't get it.
Left-wing conspiracy. I guess the right-wing conspiracy theorists are conspiring to believe that the left-wing is conspiring to do something with Taylor Swift to get Biden reelected, who's a potty mouth, by the way.
But the liberals, if you will, I don't know that the far left has any involvement with this, but if the liberals think, well, it would be good for our candidate to receive the endorsement of perhaps one of the most popular people on planet Earth at the moment, that's what you do all the time. If they could get Patrick Mahomes to endorse your candidate or anybody else who's popular and may bring people with them, well, if Taylor Swift supports my candidate, then I should support my, you know, or if I'm in.
Yeah.
But so that's just normal stuff. That's just seeking endorsements. But the other side, they seem to think that there's some conspiracy here to rig something or undermine democracy or something. I just can't figure out the hell is it that they're talking about. We're just talking about one side wants an endorsement. Yeah. That's what every side wants. Yeah. But they don't seem to see it in those terms. They see it in some broader conspiracy. And someone needs to explain it to me because I just don't get it.
Well, look, you're employing logic. And there is no logic in this movement. I mean, this is a cult. This is the cult of Trump. I honestly
But what besides the fact that one side wants their candidate to be endorsed and the other side fears that endorsement, what is it that's different about this than everybody, I mean, than any other endorsement by any other group that might have sway with voters, like the auto workers?
Because it's a conspiracy tied to the NFL to make Biden look good so that he'll get an endorsement from Taylor Swift.
So let me see. So the owners of the NFL team, most of whom are what?
Again, you're trying logic here.
Who are politically what? Jerry Jones is what? He's a left wing zealot, and Robert Kraft is a what? Those guys are somehow conspiring through Travis.
Well, they consorted their runestones.
So
they were in
actually I cannot understand. I mean, I just can't understand it even.
I understand how they get there, but there's no logic or facts involved in it. Right, John?
I should have shared this with you guys earlier in the week. A conservative columnist for the New York Times, and they do have a few, and he's one of my favorite writers, and I'm going to apologize. I'm going to mispronounce his last name. Ross Douthat, I believe. Apologies to Ross on his last name there. He wrote a very good column about this for the Times, and he lays out how the right has become so addicted to conspiracy theory that if anything happens that is on the other side, or you know, Taylor Swift leans left politically, so it must be a liberal op. They're calling this a psychological operation, and he walks through how that happened to the Republic, to his party. He's not really a registered Republican anymore, but he's still a conservative, and he walks through in the column. It's very good. I'll share it with you guys. Everybody should look it up in the New York Times. And I thought that was the smartest, if you can write smart about this particular.
About dumb people.
I thought he did a very nice job.
Say it one more time, John. What is the basic proposition that he's saying this controversy?
It's a psyop. Everything is a look, and that's not new either. I mean, that's if you go back to Waco, if you go back, the seeds of this stuff all are in Waco, Ruby Ridge, when all of those, it became very popular. And this is something I've written about often. I don't, not only they see everything as a psyop, they see everything deep state, everything's out to get them.
Right.
And if it's outside of your comfort zone, if you can't explain it inside your comfort zone, it doesn't make sense that why would Taylor Swift, she's a good God-fearing American woman, why would she, with a tied in, why would she be for Joe Biden? It must be a psyop, because you would think that you look at them, right? I'm sorry, but two very not tan people getting together, not being for Donald Trump, doesn't make sense in that world. Right. So they explain it with a psyop. Everything is, just from covering them, that's just how they tend to naturally think. So go ahead, John. Last comment before we go on to our picks
Let me read the kicker of Ross's column here. Quote, that is what the Trump era right has conspicuously failed to achieve, and it won't get there as long as it sees even cultural developments it should welcome, romances that it should be rooting for, and shakes its head and says it must be a liberal op, end quote. And that he's referring to is appearing to be the normal party. And of course, Ross, being a conservative, looks at the progressive left and thinks that they're very abnormal. But he makes the point that because the right has become so addicted to these conspiracy theories and looks at everything that is different than conservatism and thinks it's a psyop, that it has become the more abnormal of the two parties.
It makes no sense.
So before we take off, let's go over. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on the Super Bowl. It's a week out. This will post. You can be an official prognosticator today, and I'll let you go first, Michael. Who do you like, and what's your points?
San Francisco, because of Brock Purdy.
And how many points?
I think it'll be a close game. 3 points. I think that you've got to love the story of the last guy in the draft who, you know, sort of in storybook, if it were a movie, unbelievable narrative, takes his team and wins the Super Bowl. You can't not like that.
Well, it's a conspiracy.
And then, of course, at the end of the Super Bowl, Brock Purdy there holding the trophy. And instead of saying, "And I'm going to Disneyland," he says, "And I endorse Joe Biden." That's with Taylor Swift at his side. That's what I'm looking for. Then you'll hear brains exploding all over the country. That would be a great show.
That's Michael Selvin's prediction for the Super Bowl, including exploding heads. Now moving on to John T. Bennett. We got anything that's going to explode, John, in your predictions?
Hopefully nothing explodes. Hopefully just some fireworks on the field, Brian. I am going to take Kansas City here. I'm going to take Kansas City 28-23, and I'm picking KC by 5, and I just don't think that San Francisco defense is as good as we've been sold all year. I don't like their front. I would not have acquired Chase Young. He's not that strong against the run. I think you can move the ball, and I just don't think Brock Purdy, he's had some great second halves in the playoffs, but he has started very poorly. I think San Francisco digs itself a hole, and they never get out of it. KC, 28-23.
And I'm going to go with KC by 7, and I'm going to predict that there'll be a controversy at the end of the game as to whether or not they'll give the most valuable player award to Brock Purdy. I'm going to say that he'll play his ass off, but I don't think the 49ers defense will be able to contain Patrick Mahomes, and I think it'll be KC. And I'm saying this because, and as a Packers fan, I want to remind everyone that the Packers beat both of these teams in the regular season. So, anyway, so whoever wins, I like Kansas City, having lived there. So I'll go KC plus 7.
All right.
And there you go. That's it. So any last thoughts? What would you like to plug, Michael?
So again, my podcast is That Said with Michael Zeldin. And since we're on a sporting theme, I should say that 2 weeks out, my podcast interview with Hall of Fame sports writer Dave Kindred on his new book, My Home Team, comes out. In between, we have a couple of interesting books, one on Ulysses S. Grant's decimation of the Ku Klux Klan, important reading in Black History Month that we're in, and also in Black History Month, next Thursday, my book called Invisible Generals comes out with Doug Melville, which is about the two first African-American generals in U.S. military history.
Wow. I look forward to that. John, your shot. What you want to plug, brother?
Well, yeah, big week on the Hill. We could have a vote on the Senate supplemental this week. Could be next week, but Chuck Schumer wants to try to get this passed this week. So you can follow along at rollcall.com and plenty of policy analysis at CQ.com for my colleagues. If you don't have a CQ subscription, now's a good time to get one.
There you go. CQ subscription coming up next on America's Most Wanted. The name of this show is called Just Ask the Question. It's our weekly roundup of the news, Just Ask the Press. You can catch us wherever fine podcasts are sold. Once again, want to thank our listeners for making us number two in independent presidential podcasts, you know, that talk about the president. So I want to thank everybody for that. The name of the book is called Free the Press, and you can catch me every week in Salon on Thursdays with a column. So thanks for joining us. Just Ask the Press. We'll catch you next time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.